often feel close. But those same plans somehow made anything more than temporary between us seem impossible. It was the first time I'd ever had the feeling of missing someone I was still with. The waiters in the Pilsen wore short black jackets over long white aprons. They were old men from the old country. We went there often enough to have our own special waiter, Rudy, after a while. Rudy boned our trout and seasoned our salads, and at the end of the meal, he'd bring the bottle of creme de coco from the bar, along with two little glasses and a small pitcher of heavy cream. And he would make us each a King Alphonse right at our table. We'd watch as he'd fill the glasses halfway up with the syrupy brown liquor, and then carefully attempt to float a layer of cream on top. If he failed to float the cream, we'd get one for free. Who was King Alphonse anyway, Rudy? I sometimes asked, trying to break his concentration. And if that didn't work, I nudged the table with my foot so the glass would jiggle imperceptibly, just as he was floating the cream. We'd usually get at least one on the house. Rudy knew what I was doing. In fact, serving the King Alphonse has been his idea, and he also suggested the trick of jarring the table. I think it pleased him, though he seemed concerned about the way I'd stare into the liqueur glass watching the patterns. "It's not a microscope," he said. "Drink!" He liked us, and we tipped extra. It felt good to be there and to be able to pay for a meal. Kate and I met at the Pilsen for supper on my 22nd birthday. It was May and unseasonably hot. I'd opened my tie. Even before looking at the dinner menu, we ordered a bottle of Mumm's and a dozen oysters apiece. Rudy made a sly remark when he brought the oysters on platters of ice. They were freshly opened and smelled of the sea. I'd heard people joke about oysters being aphrodisiac, but I never considered it anything but a myth. The kind of idea they still had in the old country. We squeezed on lemon, added dabs of horseradish, slid the oysters into our mouths, and then rinsed the shells with champagne and drank the salty, cold juice. There is a beefy-looking couple eating schnitzel at the next table, and they stared at us with the repugnance the public oyster eaters in the Midwest often encounter. We laughed and grandly sipped it all down. I was already half tipsy from drinking too fast and started to feel filled with a euphoric, aching energy. Kate raised a brimming oyster shell to me in a toast. "To the Peace Corps." "To Europe," I replied, and we clunked shells. She touched her wine glass to mine and whispered, "Happy birthday," and then suddenly leaned across the table and kissed me. When she sat down again, she was flushed. I caught the reflection of her face in the glass covered the street musicians of Prague above our table. I always loved seeing her in mirrors and windows. The reflections of her beauty startled me. I told her that once, and she seemed to fend off the compliment, saying, "That's because you've learned what to look for," as if it were some sort of secret I'd stumbled upon. But this time, seeing her reflection hovering ghost-like above an imaginary Prague was like seeing a future from which she had vanished. I knew I'd never meet anyone more beautiful for me. We killed the champagne and sat twining fingers across the table. I was sweating. I could feel the warmth of her through her skirt under the table, and I touched her leg. We still hadn't ordered dinner. I left money on the table, and we stared each other out a little unsteadily. "Rudy will understand," I said. The street was blinding bright. A reddish sun angled just above the rims of the tallest buildings. I took my suit coat off and flipped it over my shoulder. We stopped in the doorway.